This episode of the Golf Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy, play their pick'em fantasy for a chance to win 100x on NBA, NHL, college basketball, and much more. Sign up today, use a promo code SGPN to get 100% deposit match. And we're also brought by Kutt. Kutt is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Head to Kutt.com, that's KUTT.com, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. We're also brought to you by Champs. Run your own March Madness pool and enter Champs free bracket contest for a chance to win $1,000. Go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs, enter today. And we're also brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets, a sports betting research platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app. Visit agentwebets.com. Use code SGPN to get 50% off your first month. Start making smarter bets today. All right, D-Gens, welcome back to the Golf Gambling Podcast. It is just me tonight. Boston Capper is attending to other matters. But joining me tonight, it's a very special guest, Kenny Kim of the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast, to help me break down Bay Hill, the state of golf, maybe a little bit of Washington Commanders talk at the end there. Kenny, how are you doing tonight? You ready to talk Bay Hill?
Steve, I'm ready, man. You got to do those ad reads every single week?
I do. And
unfortunately, that's a pain in the ass.
Well,
if I had to do that every single week, I would probably go crazy.
Fuck
it up and start over. We do nice things. We record it once and then they just use it throughout the whole year.
Yeah. So usually my co-host is the one. Ad reads, and I had so many windows open, I lost the window. I was scrambling to come in here. We're running late. The kids would not go to bed. I'm frazzled. Trying not to get into a fight with the wife before we get in here. But hey, now I'm all nice and relaxed, talking Bay Hill. It's a good time. And you know what? I mean, the professional golf this year, I don't know if it's been such a good time. I mean, we've had a lot of Monday finishes, unexpected winners. You know, it doesn't seem like there's really a whole lot of juice going on with golf. But, you know, I want to ask you, because you're mostly a DFS guy, this is a betting show, but I feel like this year, with how everything's been going on, just unexpectedness, chaos, this has probably been a pretty good DFS for you, right? Especially if you take a little more contrarian angle. How you been doing with DFS with this wild, crazy start of the PGA Tour season?
Yeah, funny enough, I'm known for my cash lineups, and I think so far this season, there have been like 9 events, and I think I've won like a little more than half, like one above half, like 5 out of 4 weeks, 5 out of 9 weeks. But in GPPs, I've been doing pretty well. Like, it's sort of like not, I mean, like, I haven't like won a big one, but the last like 3 weeks, I've had a lineup inside the top 200, you know, each week in the $5 drive the green, which, you know, anywhere from 75 to 150 bucks. And so that sort of covers the amount that I've been playing. So I've been like either almost covering or being up in GPPs for like half the weeks too, which is pretty rare. You know, I'm just trying to get that one, like, you know, big money score, and then try and stay afloat with my cash lineups, so, you know, I don't go broke. But it's, you're right. It has been better for me in GPPs this year. And I think that might have to do with something about the way who's winning these events.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I mean, like, it just seems like, I mean, for me personally, betting, I mean, I've never been much of a DFS guy, but as far as betting goes, you know, I tend to be a little more safer because, listen, it's the end of the day, I'm picking one guy. I can't pick everybody. It's not like a DFS lineup where I just, you know, throw it in the trash if some bum that has 3% ownership, you know, just craters. But just with looking at these leaderboards and, you know, even looking at on Saturday going into, you know, the Sunday finish for the Cognizant, it looked like one of these Puerto Rico Open leaderboards with some of the names up there. And just it seems like this year, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just because of the post June 6th thing that just, you know, all the air has been taken out of the, you know, the room with those top stars, and maybe it's kicked a little bit the mules in the ass in order to get going. But it just seems like the top guys are kind of just in cruise control right now. And it seems like it's really paying off to just be different, be wild. And I feel like just in DFS this year, that's really paid off. Do you have any particular reason maybe why we've gotten off to a little bit of a slower start than last year, when it just seemed like all the stars were doing well?
If you think about it, I mean, when golfers first went to live, it took a little, you know, they took their money and I think it took them a little bit of time to go out there and play to the level that they wanted to play because they had gotten what they wanted. you know, and they can rest on their laurels a little bit. And that's a pretty common thing between humans, right? Once you succeed enough and you get to a certain point, you're like, eh, let me take it for here for a little bit. I've been busting my ass for so long to try and get here. I'm finally here, right? Well, now that the PGA Tour guys, they're getting all their money that they want now. They're getting a shit ton more money. They're getting guaranteed money. You know, they're getting what they want. And it could be something like, well, they're resting on their laurels now because they got what they want. It's not like they're going to, you know, the ones that aren't going to go to live, they've gotten, the PGA has been taking care of them, especially if they're a big name player. They've been getting the free money, the guaranteed money, the guaranteed starts in these signature type events. Don't even really have to earn. I mean, you do have to earn your way, but if you're a top 10 player, it's going to take you a lot to drop out of these signature events, right? And so everything's catered to these, you know, the elite of the elite. And, you know, maybe it takes them a season or two to finally be like, okay, well, now I really need to get my game back together. And that could be a reason that, you know, so that's something that I was thinking about when it comes down to it. Or it could be, you know, the courses are so easy that it doesn't cause separation between the best and everyone else. You know, on these birdie fest type courses, everyone sort of becomes bunched together and no one really takes, you know, the lead up ahead. You know, but what you see in like majors and stuff, of course, is the cream rises to the top because these courses are so difficult. Well, I don't think we've played a difficult course yet this season. I mean, we have technically should have, but they ended up not being as hard as they normally are for one reason or the other. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this course plays this week. If it's all just a weather thing, you know, for the first 9 weeks here, where the course setups has been the same, and it's just guys been playing, you know, in easy weather conditions, soft conditions, or is it something that the PGA Tour is doing again to cater to the golfers? Because, you know, golfers want to go out there and grind every week. Give me all these birdies, and we'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think the weather has definitely had an impact more so on course setup. I know there was a lot made of last week at PGA National, but if you just kind of look at it, really all they did was just take a couple, you know, they had a couple of yards of fairway. The rough apparently wasn't up because it's been really cloudy in South Florida, so they can't grow the grass. And it's just been raining so much. I mean, PGA National was as green as I ever seen. And it's not necessarily to put in water on it, just the fact that it just has been raining so much. And I said this on the Sunday show, with a modern golfer nowadays, with the equipment they're playing, if you put them on a golf course that's not very long, that has very big greens, soft greens, with no wind, these guys are going to eat it up. These guys just can't miss nowadays. Like, you know, if you hit off the toe or the heel, it's going to go straight. And really the only thing that can really, you know, test them would be, you know, really narrow fairways and thick rough and crazy winds. And we end up getting that on Friday morning. Everybody was complaining about how PGA National was playing. And then Friday morning, the winds kicked up. All of a sudden, it's more of a guessing game on the bear trap, and it shows some teeth. And, you know, and there's other tournaments this year that I feel like has been kind of compromised by the weather. Like Torrey Pines even was kind of benign that week. You know, it still played tough, but I didn't feel like it was, you know, had as much teeth as prior years. Riviera had a lot of rain coming in. You know, that's had some issues with the weather for the past couple of years, a little soft with that too. So, you know, yeah, with Bay Hill this week, you know, just being in the state of Florida, and they got some rain this week. They're going to get some rain on Wednesday. It doesn't look like there's a whole rain on Thursday. It is going to be interesting to see, you know, maybe how that's going to change how it plays. You know, and maybe this is a good transition to Bay Hill right now. You know, considering how benign some of these setups have been and how Bay Hill might be a little soft, you know, this year compared to other years when we're used to just being rock hard and fast and can't get up and down. Are you making any little tweaks to what you're looking for with guys for Bay Hill this week? Or are you just going to kind of stick with what you know about this place and just go with those types of guys?
You know, I mean, just the new type of golfer nowadays, especially with the equipment that golfers have. You know, the driver has become the biggest weapon there is, you know, and they can hit, like you said, off the toe, off the heel, wherever. It's the most forgiving club in their bag now. So why wouldn't you just hit driver on every single hole possible? And I think guys who are going to be aggressive this week in softer conditions, which normally would not be the way that I think this course would have played 10 years ago, because it's the equipment. And if it's going to be soft like this, I want guys who can carry the ball a shit ton with a driver. I'm going Rory. He's my guy this week. He's my only bet. All right. He's my only bet. He is in my cash game cornerstones in DFS. I am riding him hard this week. And because I think this is the type of setup where he can succeed, something between 13 and 16 under. I don't think we'll see single digits. I know the superintendent over there does some wild ass shit with that course, but I don't know what he can really do. You know, if the course is going to be soft, like you said, if the sun hasn't been out and it can't grow that rough, the only way the rough needs to be like 5 inches this week. But the problem about that is, you know, guys are going to be hitting their driver. They'll just still be hitting 9 iron. You know, and they can probably press a little 9 iron in 5-inch rough and still get it on these soft greens. So I don't know what the solution is. We just need firm, fast conditions. We need the weather to be with us. We just got to get lucky. I mean, that's the only way you could see like a really grind out type of event nowadays, I think. It's all dependent on weather.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you as far as, you know, when it comes to some of these softer golf courses and when you have a golf course where it's really hard to hit the fairway, everybody's hitting from the rough, it really benefits the guys who are longer hitting from the rough a little more often when the greens are softer, because especially at Bay Hill, you know, when you're hitting out of that rough, the ball has no spin. It's going to run right through. You have little control. But when the ball greens are a little softer, a little more receptive, that's when it really benefits you to just hit it as far as you can. And there has been a bit of a change in strategy with Bay Hill over the years. The driving distances have gone up, you know, naturally because the ball goes farther. But it does seem like as they've narrowed the fairways a little more here over the last couple of years, you know, we've seen driving accuracy rates go down from the mid-60s to mid-50s. Driving distances go up a little bit. Yeah, sure, there's still some holes where, you know, you still play positional golf. But, you know, it's kind of like with Riviera. Guys are just figuring out, okay, I'm just going to hit it as far as I can and just see what happens. Now, in years where it was firm, you still had guys that, if you were accurate, there still is a benefit from hitting from the fairway. That's why you saw your Corey Connors and Billy Horschels and Chris Kirk do well here. But if it is playing a little more soft, I mean, obviously that's going to push them back a little bit. These are still very difficult fairways to hit. You know, it made me lean a little more towards, you're right, I think guys are a little more aggressive off the tee. And I've just been getting sick of trying to get too cute, I think, with the betting card, just saying, okay, well, this guy's been in poor form, but hey, he's really good here. You know, maybe I'm just going to go with that. I really tried to just lean a little more on just guys are just playing well right now, because I think you hit it at the nail on the head. Like, you know, these guys might be kind of complacent right now. And yeah. I don't know. There's nothing really to quantify, giving them a kick in the ass in order to get going. Like, who knows? Maybe these guys are just really only focused on players next week. You know, these guys are just coming off Riviera a couple weeks off. So, you know,
Doesn't it seem like the guys that are like in the bottom here are just hungrier? Like they want to go out there and they're going out there and doing some wild shit. Like Austin Eckrow going out there, just no one catching him, just not fucking up at all. You know, he's never won an event before, right? And he goes out there on Monday and looks like Tiger. I mean, like not Tiger, but like no one's going to catch him. You know what I'm saying? And you got these big guys like Lowry, Rory's, stuff like that behind him who can't even get close to him. It seems like to me, you know, this is the time to be like, you know, outside the top 30, somewhere between 30 and 70 on the PGA Tour, right? Because this is your time, right? Because the top 30 guys are getting fat. They're getting fat, right? And so you can go ahead and use this time to try and jump up as far as you can. And this is what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I'm looking at my betting card right now, and I realize I still went a little safe. I just resorted back to my old ways as far. But I got a couple long shots on there that we'll talk about a little bit. But before we get to that, why don't we get to our first break, and then we'll get to go into the top of the board here, start bringing down the odds board, who we like at Bay Hill. So let's first talk about Cut. So Cut is the peer-to-peer social betting platform. It's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Peer-to-peer social betting is a new and better way to bet. Bet directly against your friends or other users on sports, politics, pop culture, you name it. And they got verifiable outcomes with tons of fun social features to give it the feel of a betting social network. Cut handles lower vig, and fully customizable odds to create your own bets. And they also handle the payment side of things, so you never have to worry about chasing anyone down for money. It also has social features like group chats, betting leaderboards, head-to-head history, so much more. So you can just talk trash to your friends, you know, wave in their little face how much better you are betting on cut than them. And they also have rewards too. You get cash back every time you bet against your friends and other users on cut. So download cut today in the app store over on cut.com. That's K-U-T-T. And use promo code SGPN for 10% bonus. And we're also by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. And obviously, you know, you're listening to this podcast right here. We've been promoting Underdog a lot. Underdog is a great place to, you know, play games for the PGA Tour. You can, you know, pick your favorite players, go higher or lower on certain things like birdies and pars and fairways hit. And you can win up to 100 times your money on a single night. You pick anywhere from 2 to 5 golfers or players. They can pick them entry. And you can also make rivals picks, which pits two players against each other's, you know, who's going to have more yards or birdies, et cetera. So last week, you know, as people were kind of complaining about PGA National, you know, I realized things were a little soft. Took, you know, a couple unders on some round scores and birdies, you know, still end up working for me, even though the golf course didn't play quite as well as what people wanted. So sign up today with using the promo code SGPN to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick 'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. Don't forget to register with any promo code using SGPN to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick 'em special. Must be 18 plus and present in the state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncgambling.org. All right. So let's get back to the top of the board. All right. So you are on Rory all in, single bullet, max exposure with DFS. So you think this is the week that he's going to come through. So I guess, what did you see last week out of Rory that, you know, besides obviously the really good course history, why do you think that this is going to be the week that like he fight, like things finally click for him and basically chalk ends up prevailing for the first time this year?
It didn't even look like he had his A game, and he just destroyed everybody tee to green, like demolished everybody tee to green. You know, and he didn't even look like he was trying very hard. He's the only top guy with a win this year, right? You know, he won in the Middle East, and he's the only top guy on the PGA Tour that's felt a victory like in a long time, right? So, you know, I mean, everything just points to it. He plays this course extremely well. I think it's going to play a little bit easier than it has in the last few years. You know, the thing about Rory is, you know, I don't think he's won a PGA Tour or event under minus 12. I do not think it's ever happened. And I think he's only won like two or maybe three or four under minus 15. Don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure it's close to that, right? And so, you know, he usually comes in on higher scoring events and stuff like that, especially like tougher courses where it might have just played easier that week, right? You've seen him, you know, shoot really, really good scores at like really, really tough courses like Congressional, right? And, you know, Congressional, again, soft, long. It just seems like it's Rory to me this week. And, you know, he doesn't have to worry about that board anymore. Like, he seems like refreshed and like I don't know, like a new man. Like, when you hear him talk on the interviews, like everything he says is like so much more cleaner and crisp. And I believe him, and it's true. It's like weight off of his shoulder. It's his time. He's going to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's. I think when you referenced that Bay Hill he won, that was a very easy Bay Hill. I think it won at 18 under that 18. Year, relatively benign conditions. And yeah, like I gave the face to you. It wasn't that I disagreed. I was actually trying to think in my head about his wins and if it was anything like with single digits. And I couldn't think of any, even the There's majors. Like the PGA Kiowa was difficult, but he ran away with it. I think he was at 12 under when he won. So. Yes. Yeah, so at times when there is scoreable conditions, and which, you know, I mean, obviously Bay Hill very tough. Yeah, you know, I think you make some very valid points. And even like what surprised me when I ran the numbers with Rory this week was, despite the ugly triple bogey he had on 16 on Saturday, just everything still looked really good. And I think it just speaks to how bad he kind of putted last week. And, you know, that's kind of been a little
16 issue. Was playing the easiest out of the bear trap three. So he must have lost. What, three strokes? So, I mean, at minimum, I mean, probably three full strokes on that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you put one in the water and then you try to hit out of the water, taking our penalty. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, that that's not nothing. That's three full strokes and he still gained, I think, what, like 90 to green. So,
yeah.
I mean, that he really crushed it with the ball striking last week, which is a positive sign because he wasn't hitting all that great. Didn't hit all that great. Well, over
and, you know, the other thing is, you know, his thing about his irons where he's just, you know, okay. He's, his worst part is his wedges. You know, you don't see many wedges at Bay Hill. You don't see many wedges at Bay Hill. Now, what the best part of Rory's iron game? Probably his mid to long irons and hitting the ball out of the rough.
Yeah, no,
that's
I would
agree. What you're going to see, right? I mean, that's everything's pointing to Rory for me. And, you know, the thing is, like, I don't even really like the dude, but it just seems like everything is stacking up. I just believe in the win for him.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, so other guys besides Rory in this range, you know, you got Hovland, who's still kind of scuffling, trying to find stuff. You got Xander and Cantlay, just disgusting final rounds of Riviera. Not really Florida guys either. You know, Cantlay's got a little bit of success here. Xander, not much. Ludvig seems to be pretty popular this week. You got Cam Young, you know, Spieth, Burns. Is there any, who are a couple other guys like under 25 to one, that also pique your interest this week for Bay Hill?
I mean, just looking at it, Oberg at like 20 is someone that I would probably look at just because, again, he's the guy who's going to, he's going to hit it far. And the thing about it, he's so accurate off the tee for the amount, for as far as he hits it. You know, and if he's hitting at 330 in the air and doesn't, you know, and hits the most fairways, I mean, he's going to have a tremendous advantage going into there. I know it's his first time, but I do think the guy has a lot of skill, and he's going to be a superstar. And the easiest way to become, to get that trajectory is winning an event like this. And I think he has the stones and he's been around enough and he's gotten his victory already out of the way. And a couple on another one on the Euro Tour where, you know, I think he's ready to make the next step even within just a year. That's how good his game is.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's something that I would catch my eye. Maybe Burns. Huh? I always like Sam Burns.
All right. Well, you just named the two guys I bet. So, So start with Ludvig. He actually played this event last year and he was T12 heading into the final round. And, you know, shot 73 because he's a college kid. Didn't really know his name. You know, shoot him, you know, at that point. But listen, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, the reason why Scottie Scheffler is so great here is because he hits it long and straight. And Ludvig can do the exact same thing. Same thing with Rory when he gets the driver going, too. And, you know, if I'm leaning really a lot on off the tee play, obviously that's a very predictive measurement for Bay Hill. It's also a great way to separate yourself in tournament off the tee here. You know, the iron play has been great. You know, maybe should have won Pebble Beach if they played that final round. The weather didn't completely impact things. But, hey, c'est la vie. But yeah, I think, you know, this is a great golf course. And I'm clearly not alone on this take. I think a lot of people have circled Ludvig for this week. And, you know, I've been saying for a month I was going to bet him here. And I can't just, you know, because everybody else is taking him, just not taking him to that point, because I'm going to have severe FOMO and probably not want to do the show anymore. But, you know, and then Sam Burns, what caught my eye with Burns, and you don't necessarily want a guy who sprays it everywhere here. It's kind of a lot why, like, Wyndham Clark hasn't been all that great. Even Burns hasn't been all that good. But he's got a ninth place finish here. So at least he knows he can get kind of towards the top. But he's been driving it so good. And it's not just with the distance. It seems like he has some element of control now off the tee. You know, last couple tournaments, gained a lot of strokes off the tee. You know, he's never always been a guy that gains a ton in that metric because he just will put in a water hazard, put in the woods or something. So, you know, he'll hurt himself there. But he's driving it great. The iron play has been really solid. Obviously, really good on Bermuda. And if this might be a little softer conditions, a little more receptive, I am getting Burns at 30. I know he's like low 20s, mid 20s now. I thought that was a good price for him. But yeah, Ludvig and Sam Burns, the start of my card. And then I also bit the bullet with Spieth. I think I got roped into that because playing good. You know, I mean, he got DQ'd from Genesis. Maybe there's a little bit of chip on his shoulder. Two top five finishes here. Despite the fact he's not the best driver, but he's been driving the ball pretty good for most of the year. The iron play, you know, has been a little bit up and down, but I've seen it pop in a couple places. Obviously, good putter on Bermuda. That's again a bit up and down, but I like seeing in his profile a little bit of a spike week. I know he can have big putting weeks here, not just here, but in other events. I am getting a 28 on him. And then I just kind of skip the middle range. We'll go to some long shots a little bit to the end. But yeah, I kind of just circled Ludwig, Burns, and Spieth towards top. I mean, I considered Hovland. I considered Cam Young. I considered JT even. I think JT is a interesting case this week. You know, coming off a really bad finish at Riviera. I mean, he was the hottest player. Everyone wanted to bet him at Riviera that week. You know, Tiger turned out to be sick or whatever that was. Maybe JT got a little bit of what Tiger was feeling that week. I don't know. How you feel about JT this week at Bay Hill?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I was pushing him hard all year, right up until Genesis. Basically, I said, I'm going to bet him every week until he wins because he's going to win soon. And I guess I'm not betting him this week because I'm going all Rory. Now, I still have some room. I didn't go full bankroll on Rory. I went, you know, so I can win my, you know, 21 units, 22 units or whatever. I'm trying to win on an outright bet. So that's what I've bet him so far. So I have room in my bankroll. And that's, you know, what you just said is very, very tempting. I mean, he's not short. But also off the tee, he can get it a decent ways, and he hits it pretty high. But his big thing is he's so good around the green. You know, he has that touch that even if he misses a little bit off, or if the conditions get a little bit more difficult, you know, than I'm expecting. You know, I'm just taking a flyer here based upon what I think is going to happen. Maybe the course just does play tough. And he goes out there and, you know, has to work around the green a lot. I like that idea. 30-1, yeah, that seems like a decent price in this field because you're right. Prior to that Genesis, the guy was playing exceptional golf. So it's making me think a little bit about JT.
Yeah, and I bet him last year at this event, and he was hanging around going to the final round. I think he was four back after Friday, and he hit the ball great in really bad weather on Saturday. And he still was four back at Kitayama. I think everybody just expected Kitayama to blow at that point. And I was like, okay, you know, good conditions on Sunday, scoreable conditions, he's going to get that putter going. And he played really bad on Sunday, but he played a lot better in this event than I think the final results showed. And I saw him dip to 30, 35. What ended up, I think, at the end of the day, just watching JT, and this is always really dangerous to handicap like this because I've been burned by like a, you know, saying this about like a Morikawa. It's just watching him putt right now, I don't know if that's in the tank to actually win. I think it's probably there for a good finish. So listen, I mean, you get a top 10 price on him at like, you know, plus 250 or so. You get top 20 plus money. I got him at plus 120 for a top 20 with no dead heat in a limited field with a guy who was playing so good until the Genesis. Everybody wanted to bet, hitting it great. Off the tee was pretty good. Obviously great around the green. Yeah, I that's where he'll be on my betting card, but I really was tempted to bet JT at 35.
I thought there were a lot of good top 20 numbers.
There were, actually.
To the field, like I was just looking at it. I mean, I think there still are. I mean, I saw like Fitzpatrick at minus 105, mm-hmm. Jason Day at plus 105, Keegan at plus 135. You know, Day's been playing really, really good golf, and he loves this course. Keegan loves the course. You know, mad top 20s in his career. I thought there were some good numbers.
Yep, there were. Maybe we can talk about those numbers when we take another quick ad break, and then we'll get to like the middle tier. We got a question about Ben on. We'll get your thoughts on him. I have some thoughts on him too. So why don't we take our second break, and then we'll get to that. So let's talk about Champs. Champs is hosting a free March Madness bracket contest for a chance to win $1,000. Plus, if you host your own March Madness pool on Champs, you'll get an extra free entry into the bracket contest. Tiebreakers are determined by who enters first, so make sure you register now so you don't miss out. So head over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs. And we're also brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets. Win bigger by betting smarter this NBA season with Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Research every NBA and soccer bet with historical stats and data. Enter any parlay idea into Hall of Fame Bets' revolutionary parlay optimizer tool to get hit rates broken down by leg, as well as the expected probability for the entire parlay. Sort all players by hit rate for any bet to learn which players are hot and which picks have value. So stop betting in the dark and join over 30,000 users researching with Hall of Fame Bets to craft more intelligent, data-driven parlays. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit HOFBets.com and use code SGPN to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning with Hall of Fame Bets. All right, let's move over to the mid-tier. And you mentioned a couple of guys, Jason Day, you know, playing great. You know, he's a former winner here, a little bit up and down with his career, but he had a top 10 here last year here. So good course fit, playing awesome. Minwoo Lee coming off a great finish at the Honda. Ben Ahn rallying after being basically left for dead on Friday and destroying anybody's outrights and then doing something on Sunday to kind of rope you back in. We actually have a question from a listener. What do you think about Ben Ahn this week? He was a popular pick last week. I bet him at the Cognizant. That didn't go great. I think he has a couple good finishes here. Obviously, he's a bomber. Iron play can be a little hit and miss, but great around the green. Tends to putt pretty well in Bermuda. Not so much here, but in Bermuda in general. What do you think about Ben Ahn this week?
I mean, you know, first instinct would say that he wouldn't win in an event, in a signature type event with this type of field. But, I mean, like what we've seen this year, there's been wildest stuff that happened. So it's not even out, you know, it's not even close to out of the realm of happening. You know, he's been playing pretty good golf. It's been fairly consistent. You know, his tee to green game is always going to be pretty good, and he hits it far. Off the tee, and not Rory ball flight height far, but he hits it pretty damn far. And, you know, I am rocking his hat actually with that he has signed, and so maybe I should think of him more. But you know, for Benny, it's always going to come down to the putter. You know, more than likely that's what it comes down to. And you know, 99.9 times out of 10 out of 100, it hasn't been enough. At least on this tour.
No, it definitely hasn't. I mean, obviously, anybody who had him at the Sony was burned badly. I had Keegan at the Sony, and we both were, anybody who was on both those were big losers when Grayson Murray 501 stole it there. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Ben Ahn, I definitely considered it. It was either I had the last spot in my car. It was either just go Spieth, because I do think at some point, just all of this nonsense is going to reverse itself at some point. And I'm just going to go stick with what I've been doing with the cards since ever since last year. And, you know, I could go fishing for a Ben Ahn or Minwoo Lee. You know, I definitely consider both. Obviously, both playing great coming in was definitely a big plus. But, you know, I do think at the end of the day, both of them can be pretty wild off the tee. And, you know, that is something that at this golf course can be a little bit of a no-no. So that was enough for me to write them off. Obviously, they were pretty close. I like Adam Scott a lot this week. You know, he's got some, you know, marginal success here, but playing really good golf going all the way back to last fall. You know, last year his irons were pretty putrid for a lot of the year. They've been a lot better. Obviously a big hitter. He's been putting relatively well for the last, you know, year or so. I don't think I'm really ready to commit for, I don't know if I see Adam Scott really winning again on the PGA Tour, or like maybe one of these high level events. But hey, listen, top 20 plus 170 for a guy who's hitting it great. That was enough for me to sign me up. How about Matthew Fitzpatrick? Let me get your thoughts on him. Seems like a popular outright play, played, you know, pretty good last week. How do you feel about Fitz for Bay Hill?
I mean, you know, he's played this course a bunch and he's always had success. I mean, and he showed glimpses last week. His game hasn't been as high as probably he's wanted. It's taken him a little bit of time this season to get his game really good. But I thought he looked pretty decent last week. So, you know, he's coming into a course that he obviously loves. And, you know, he has the skills. You know, he added a lot of distance to his drive. He's hitting that ball a lot farther than he used to. And that's helped him tremendously. It helped him win the U.S. Open when he won a couple of years ago. And then, of course, his short game is always solid. His irons have always been, you know, hit or miss. But, you know, again, this course seems to suit him. And I don't mind the top 20 number of minus 105. I don't think I would bet an outright on him this week. But I think a top 20 is still there. And then he's just gradually going to get better as the weather gets warmer. And we'll see him in major season.
Yep. Okay. All right. So let me ask you a couple guys who really just sprayed a lot off the tee. You know, they tend to be very volatile golfers when they're on, they're really hot. When they crash, they crash. Wyndham Clark or Saheed Tagala? Who do you like more this week?
I mean, you got to go Wyndham. I mean, the guy's a winner, right? I mean, like, you know, he's won a major. He's won an elevated event. This is not old. This is not, you know, new hat for him. He's used to this shit. So, you know, I would rather have him out there doing his thing, pounding it as far as he can with, you know, slipping his wedges in, good short game, can putt. It just makes sense. I know he hasn't had the best success here, but if you're just going on a pure talent standpoint at this point in time, and Saheed is great. I love him. He's a wonderful player, but Wyndham's definitely, I think, talent-wise, a notch above. And so I would go with Wyndham over Saheed when it comes down to it. It's probably going against a lot of people, I would think.
I don't know. I've heard a little bit of Wyndham talk. I think just because they're putting him on Bermuda. I mean, I think just the fact that, you know, long player, up and down, but overall relatively good iron numbers, good putter. He should fit here. For whatever reason, it just hasn't really worked out for him. I was actually going back and forth about Saheed Tagala because it just seems like every time people are just kind of off him, he does tend just to kind of rise at the occasion, you know, when people least expect it. Like, you know, and he's been on some golf courses where, you know, he can't spray it. Like, he's got a top five in Memorial. You know, that's a place where that is really penal off the tee if you're spraying. You know, just ask Bryce when he got the 10, I think, on number 15 there. And he's got a 14th place finish here. And, you know, he bombed out of Riviera when I think people really wanted him to do well. You know, he bombed out at Sony after a really good showing at the Century. Maybe he's just kind of an off and on golfer. You know, he's obviously shown a lot of upside this year. Maybe this could be a golf course that I think he actually drove the ball pretty well last year, despite the fact he's a little bit of a fire hose. Maybe he, when he gets to these, some of these penal golf courses, he does kind of knuckle down a little bit. But again, I'm a little bit of a coward with my betting card, so left him off. But, you know, he's been dipping in the outright market this week. I think he's down 60-65 to 1. I mean, that's kind of tempting. You know, he's got a high ceiling. So if you want just an outright, you know, just set and forget it, burns you, c'est la vie, I think Saheed might be an okay play, you know, just for your outright card. So we've been talking a lot about bombers, though. So why don't we give a little bit of love with the short guys? So obviously you got guys like Harris English, Corey Connors, Chris Kirk, really good here. You have the struggling Tom Kim, who could be good here, but just, I don't know, things are just a mess with him. Who are a couple of those guys that maybe you like this week?
Tom's not as bad as Sungjae. Sungjae looks off.
Yes.
Sungjae looks like something's wrong. Tom, you saw glimpses last week. His game was pretty good. He just, you know, ended up getting a lot of doubles, which, you know, can happen at PGA National. That's, you know, that's a not unheard of there. But I guess, you know, other than Chris Kirk is a guy that, you know, I like in DFS a lot. His price is really good, like $1,700. I think he's made this cut at this event a bunch. He's had like a not a bad season so far. It hasn't been like anything exciting, but I think his finishes have all been better than middle of the road. So, you know, going in there, and I think I don't know what his number is right now. What is it, like 75 for Chris Kirk? Yeah,
it's like hanging around like 60-65 or so. DraftKings, he's been seen as a little bit of 50, but you know, 50-75.
Okay.
You know, you can make that kind of work. But yeah, I mean, I think Chris Kirk has been, I think people are looking at the fact that he hit it really good last week, didn't putt very well, which would be a surprise for Chris Kirk, a really good Bermuda putter. Obviously, a lot of success. You just said that, you know, a couple of minutes ago, you know, a lot of top 20s here, almost one that I think the Bryson year was where he was close in the mix to winning. So yeah, I think he's a little low popular with DFS, but, you know, if you're just looking for top 20 market, that's a good price at like plus 165, you know, hanging around like, you know, that Adam Scott, like Harris English is a similar price to him as far as like a top 20, you know, obviously guys that shown a lot of form here, you know, that's not a bad option. You're right about Sungjae, by the way. Last year he was battling through that neck injury around this time, went over to Korea, won, and then came back to Oak Hill. I live in Rochester, so I saw him firsthand at Oak Hill. And he was terrible. And I just chalked it up to, all right, we're just, you know, jet lagged. But then it just, for 2 months, he just couldn't hit an iron shot. Then it got a little better, but it seems like maybe we're back to that. Maybe that neck injury is popping up a little bit. Kind of like how that's kind of derailed Hideki for a little bit. You know, you never really know if he's the right. he's healthy or
not. I feel like his putting has been really, really bad. I'm trying to look at his numbers here.
It's a little off. It's mostly the approach play. I got him losing over his last 12 rounds about 0.8 shots per round with the approach shots. It's been really bad with the irons. And
so his irons have been off, huh?
Yeah,
that's so not good. I thought it was more his putter, but you're right. His putter hasn't been great in his last five. I don't know what to say. I mean, the biggest thing about him, because he's one of my favorite players, of course, and it does look like his game is off. So, I mean, do you just play through it? Maybe he's not playing enough. I don't know. Maybe he needs to play just every week like he did the first couple of years of his career so he can get back and remember what's going on. He has Willie Wilcox as his caddy. It sort of seems like since he's come on, this is when the problem has happened. I'm not saying it's Willie's fault, but, you know, at some point, maybe you think about going back to someone you're more familiar with, who speak the language, your main language. I always think that's a big deal. Like I don't understand how some caddies, some golfers who predominantly speak a certain language can work with people who don't speak their language. Like, it seems like a disadvantage to me. It's worked in the past for people, but I don't know. Just to me, it seems strange.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to steer this to a LIV conversation, one of the things I've actually liked about LIV this year watching the broadcast is we've got a lot of really insightful caddy player conversations with the mics there. Like, I remember specifically at Mayakoba with Joaquin Niemann's caddy just being adamant about, you have to hit the 8-iron here, you got to go long. And Joaquin even kept shaking him off, and the caddy's like, just hit this. And you're right. I mean, like, there has to be clear communication with the caddy and the player. And, you know, hey, I mean, if there is a language barrier, maybe something is happening. And maybe that is showing up with the iron numbers, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe there is a disconnect there. All right. And the last guy in this mid-range, I got him at 90 at the beginning of the week because I've kind of just thrown my hands up in the air at this point, and I don't really understand it. I don't know why it's happening, but this Jake Knapp phenomenon going on right now, I mean, it seemed like people just thought he was this 23-year-old college stud. He's actually going to be 30, I think, in a couple of months. Dude literally is like, it's like the movie The Natural with Robert Redford. Just out of nowhere, just becomes a star overnight. And I can't explain where all this good form is coming from. I got him at 90 at the beginning of the week. He's all the way up to, I think, like 45, 50. Do you think Jake Knapp can continue on a golf course that probably, based on how he's hitting, should suit his game? Do you think he can keep it up this week?
Dude, that swing is so smooth, right?
Yeah.
It's so silky. He's like a beefed up Freddie Couples, right? Because it's just a butter swing where it doesn't look like he's doing anything with his body, not exerting any force, and the ball just flying in the air. It's pretty amazing to see. Like, I don't know what the hell he was doing for the past 8 years being a bouncer. And, you know, he hasn't won since Canada. And he comes in this year and is doing this stuff. It's amazing. I don't know. I can't compare it to anything else. I mean, maybe Eric Cole, but without the heartbreak, right? I mean, this guy, just his swing just seems like there's so much more talent in his game. And, like, I was really impressed with him last week. At one point in time, you thought maybe he could win again, right? I mean, like, you know, he got to on Saturday, he was one off the lead. At one point in time, I think he might have even been tied on the weekend. So, I mean, the guy obviously has skill. He's obviously supremely confident at this moment in time. He knows he can hang, right? And when you get that feeling where you realize you know you can hang and you got the skill like that, I mean, shoot, some stuff could happen. And 90 to 1 seems like a pretty good number to me. If I saw that that early, I would have taken that myself.
Yeah, I mean, that was on Monday morning as they were finishing up the Cognizant. I was joking with my text chain. I just said, like, I don't get this Jake Knapp thing. I'm just going to bet it whatever number it is. It originally was just going to be Ludwig Knapp only card. But I saw it at 90. I'm like he was priced around like Hadwin and Hoagie. And EVR is playing great, but Eric Cole, Poston, Luke List, I'm like this is just mispriced at this point. And maybe this is me coming way too late, and this is actually what's going to stop the Jake Knapp Express. So I'm sorry anybody who's been riding it. I'm finally on the bandwagon. But listen, like you just said, like the guy probably feels like he can hang right now. He got the stamp of approval from Rory. Rory said he was the real deal. What's been interesting about Knapp, I'm a big data guy, and I've been looking at a lot of the strokes gained per shots. And what the data is telling me is that from over 200 yards, he's actually pretty terrible with his long irons. Like one of the worst in the PGA Tour. But then I see him like lead the field in strokes gained approach at Torrey Pines, which is all long approach shots, or in Mexico, hit it great. Something is not computing. I don't know if maybe it's the fact he hits it so far. Maybe a lot of these longer approach shots isn't really all that long for him, but you're right. And like watching him, because he was on PGA Tour Live last week for the first couple of days, and everything just seems like it's going to 10 feet. And at that point, it's just like, you know what? I think I just need to just bite the bullet, admit my bad take. And maybe me being on this week is going to stop Jake Knapp this week. But you know what? At 9-1 at a golf course that if he shows up with what he's been bringing, with how well he's driving, with how good his irons have been, you know, his short game has been unbelievable. That's the reason why he hung out in Mexico. Why don't we keep it rolling? All right, so let's go to some longer shots. I got a couple names down here. Anybody around like, you know, 80 to 100 to 1 that might pique your interest of adding maybe to a card with Rory this week?
You know, I probably wouldn't, but I probably should, right? Because, I mean, just looking at these numbers from 100 to 1 and below, and, you know, in this field, I don't think I'd go anywhere. Maybe Sammy Vallenacki at 200, you know, because he's just coming off, his best finish out there. You know, he could play. He's won a couple of times on a European tour. I like that he's, you know, like fat and overweight. I'm always a big fan of those type of guys. So, you know, I don't mind throwing him, you know, the 200 to 1. That sounds decent to me. But other than that, I mean, like, I don't know. I probably wouldn't go too deep into this triple-digit range. Maybe Cameron Davis, 110 to 1. I mean, you know, iron game, decent long irons. But can he really win? I'd probably do the each way pretty heavily, probably the 8. So those odds would probably shorten a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, so a couple of names I had down here. You know, I don't think he's actually going to win, but Matthew Pavon just seems like
it's still he's a guy. What are his odds?
So he was hanging around like 100 to 1 again this week, and he's playing good golf.
And okay, I would have mentioned him if I knew he was 100 to 1.
Yeah,
You're right. I figured he'd be like 50 to 1 or something like that.
No,
so like I said, a lot of my research was like just Rory.
that makes your content very short this week. I mean, we probably we could just do like a TikTok probably. But with Pavon, I mean, he took a month off just because he was just so drained. Didn't play Riviera, but, you know, top 30 finish at the golf course. I don't think he's played before. You know, ball striking numbers were okay. But, you know, I mean, listen, the guy won Torrey Pines. The iron numbers have been just completely unbelievable this year. You know, so far it's a very limited sample size, but when he's putt on Bermuda, it's been pretty good. You know, he putts pretty well over in the Middle East. There's a lot of Bermuda over there too. A lot of similar Bermuda, like the Tiff Eagle that you're going to see this week at Bay Hill. You know, I put a position on him. I got top 30 plus 120. You know, I'm just being a little conservative. Eventually, I feel like this seems like a really good bet. Yeah, I feel like it's going to end, but in an 80-man or 70-man field where one of the best guys this year, yeah, I'll get plus money on that.
I mean, if he makes the cut, you're better than 50-50.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I think the cut rule this week is pretty absurd. You got 70 guys in top 50 and, you know, 10 within
the there was a lot of people that missed the cut last time that fought me. I can tell you that right now at Genesis.
That is
Justin
true.
Justin Thomas. But, yeah, I mean, it was basically a DFS. It was very similar to, like, a full field 6 of 6 week. So, I mean, it was a one time, right? So who knows what's going to happen, but it definitely affected me personally last time.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody who had JT on my betting card and everything were just like, I think him, Fitz, Spieth got DQ'd.
Yeah.
It's a lot of chalk. Didn't make it. But yeah, I mean, that definitely screwed a lot of people. But yeah, I mean, Pavon, I think if you think maybe he can win again, he's playing good enough.
The guy's been unbelievable. Like, he was in contention last week again.
Yeah.
Like, I was saying, like, I wrote on Twitter, I was like, is this guy elite? Like, why do I see him on top of the leaderboard in every single week? Doesn't matter the course. Easy course, top of the leaderboard. tough course, top of the leaderboard. Like, and this has not been like a short thing where it's just been a couple of months. You can go back to the fall. Like, it's been an extended amount of time where he's been very, very good. If I saw 100-1 on him, I would have taken him. I just saw Rory 10-1 or 8.5-1, and I bet that. That was my morning this morning.
Well, Pavon is basically French Jake Knapp because he's what, like 36 years old. He's never really done much on the Euro Tour until about the fall last year. I mean, his year on the DP World Tour wasn't even all that impressive until the fall. He won, I think, once. And they had a couple other top five finishes. I think he just barely got into
the top 10, right?
Yeah. And then he kept it rolling in Sony. And I think he didn't do all the great Amex, but then showed up at Torrey Pines, where I wouldn't expect a guy like Pavon to do awesome. And he won that one.
Euros tend to do pretty well at this course too, right? I mean, not many Americans have won this event in the last 20 years, right? Tiger, Matt Every, but maybe like two or three more, I know, recently. There's only been like Kitayama last year. Mm-hmm. Did Bryson win this? Bryson won this.
Scheffler.
Scheffler win?
Yeah, Scheffler won. Leishman's an Australian, so he won. But it's been Molinari, Hatton.
Yeah,
it's been a lot of Euros.
A lot of Euros and some Aussies.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's a different test at Bay Hill. It's a little more. Yeah, I mean, in years where it was firm, you know, it definitely was a little more about the ball striking. I mean, with a little softer conditions, you know, I don't know if that's going to translate quite as much, but, you know, we'll see. One guy I did bet that he's a loser. But even though he missed the cut last week, he still hit it relatively well. Still gained a lot of strokes tee to green. The putter did not work for him last week. You know, he was in the mix at Torrey Pines. He played pretty well, I think, at either Sony or Amex. I forget which one. He's popped a couple times. Or no, he played well in Mexico. He played well at Torrey. Did not play well last week. He was a popular pick. How about Steven Yeager, 120-1? And driving the ball really good. Some length off the tee. The iron play is definitely hit or miss, but it's reminding me a little bit of how Kirk Kitayama kind of was coming into last year. You know, he was playing okay golf. You know, the ball striking numbers looked okay with him. Longer player, fits his profile here. And then he finished, I think, 54th last year, but he hit it okay. So, figure for a guy who's been in the mix a couple times this year, over 101. And look at who's been winning these things. And, you know, maybe guys at the top are just all about winning the players, and this is just batting practice for them. Maybe a guy like Yeager can, you know, steal it. You know, a couple of our names down here. Emiliano Grillo, I think, played a lot better in Mexico than what he showed. He really faded on Sunday, but he's been good at Bay Hill. Not the longest guy, but maybe this is going to be more the classic Bay Hill with the classical ball strikers. You just keep the ball in front of them. He's been putting really well this year. So that's a big thing. Guys who've been trending with the putter coming in have done well at Bay Hill in terms of winning. You know, like Molinari was trending with the putter. Kitayama was trending with the putter. Maybe Griot can finally get another, you know, get another win after winning last year. Colonial, I think he's hanging the hundreds as well. You know, Patrick Rogers played well in Mexico. He's been decent here. I think a couple top 20 finishes, longer hitter. He, you know, he's having some trouble with the putter lately, but everything else kind of looks okay. That's an RNA to me consider. That's probably about it though. You know, going past 100-1. Those are the guys I like. So, all right, so before we get out of here, though, you are obviously a big Commanders fan. I'm a Giants fan, and we both have quarterback issues. Yes. So you have, what, the number two pick in the draft?
Yes, we do.
So who do you like? I think Caleb's going to go off the board at one. So it's, what, between Daniels and May, or
May,
J.D. McCarthy is rising up. Who do you want out of that bunch?
I still have, like, PTSD from RG3, right? And Jane Daniels – he reminds me, like, the skill level is so strong, but the dude needs to learn how to slide, right? Like, he was taking hits that he would, if those were NFL players, he would die. Like, literally die. Like, multiple hits I've seen him take in college. If a NFL linebacker did that to him, there could be death, right? And so I can't, even with that amount of skill, I just can't really mess with him, because it just reminds me of RG3. And there's a big rumor today in the Commanders rumor mill is that Daniels hates our GM, Adam Peters, because Jaden and Ayuk used to play together over in college in somewhere on the West Coast. I forget which school. Arizona State, maybe, or Arizona is where they started. And they're still boys now. And I guess Ayuk doesn't like Adam Peters. And then something about, you know, it was just a rumor that, you know, Jaden wouldn't want to play for him anyways. That was a rumor in our neck of the woods today, you know, and I was floating around. There's plenty of those when it comes to the Commanders in the offseason.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Jaden Daniels' slight frame. I don't bet a lot of college football, but the last couple of years, you know, it's Labor Day weekend. I've had a couple of drinks. I want to watch the LSU-Florida State game. And, you know, I just think, all right, LSU's SEC powerhouse, ACC's kind of, you know, kind of garbage. Now, I'm a big Syracuse fan, and, you know, they're not all as good as what they used to be. So I just blindly bet LSU. Syracuse. What's that?
Did you go to Syracuse?
No, I live in Rochester, though. I just grew up, you know.
I went to Virginia Tech, and so we used to have battles against Syracuse. You know, McNabb versus, you know, whoever back in the day.
Yep, you did. I was in grade school. I remember a lot of those. And then you guys hightailed it to the ACC, and then we followed you about a decade later. But I was like, all right, I'll just blindly bet LSU. And then the first time I did that, I turned on the TV and I'm like, who's this twig at quarterback for LSU? And they couldn't move the ball. He tried running, and they got stuffed every time. And I'm like, all right, this was a stupid bet. And then the following year, just completely forgetting all that happened, I'm like, all right, I'll take LSU in the points. I turn on the TV, and I'm like, oh, this is why I don't bet. This is twig at quarterback, and the same thing happened. He couldn't move the ball. So you're right. Like, I mean, you see, like, Bryce Young with the Panthers, just, you know, this tiny guy, and it just it doesn't work out for him, you know, if he's really accurate. And, yeah, like, you know, Jaden Daniels had a great year. I don't know. I think the RG3.
Give me the big gun. Give me May.
Yeah.
Give me May.
Yeah, although, did you see they did a vignette with Phil at Live Vegas, and Derek May was with him. I think I got a little concerned about the character of Derek May. He seems a little dorky, a little too happy-go-lucky. But, hey, listen, they can't all be perfect. So, you know, listen, Phil Rivers is a weirdo, and he's trying to be a good quarterback. So, yeah, you know.
He could be the craziest person in the world if he throws for, like, 4,800 yards and 42 touchdowns. I'm okay. He can act however the hell he wants in my book.
Yep. If he gets the Lombardi trophy back to Washington, that'd be good for you. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen as a Giants fan. I'm hoping right now.
We're like the ugly stepchildren of the NFC East right now.
Both of us.
We're horrible.
It really is. We keep just stepping on our dicks.
Daniel Jones is horrible.
He is horrible. I've been off the Daniel Jones train since day one. They wrote me in. When Daboll came in, I'm like, all right, like maybe we can kind of make this work. He's not the long-term guy, but maybe we make it work. And then they tried to expand the playbook last year, and it just did not work. And it's very telling that Daniel Jones sinks because Tyrod Taylor looked, you know, average, but he looked better than Daniel Jones. And then they brought in, you know, DeVito, who should be working at Subway, and he looks relatively
That was successful. Fun. I was even rooting for his ass. You know, during when he was coming. And it was that was a fun time in football last year, I have to admit, with DeVito.
It was.
He came in for those like 3 weeks. It was hilarious. It was great.
It was a fun 3 weeks. It was bad that we ruined our draft position out of that. But at this point, though, I'm a little torn between because there's so many holes on the Giants roster right now. It's still an offensive line. We don't have a wide receiver. We have no linebackers. Like Xavier McKinney, we're going to let him go. So our secondaries. The holes are like, I don't know how much I love the idea of trading up for a quarterback, but man, we have to address it somehow. If they end up doing it, I'll be happy with it just because I'll know Daniel Jones is out, but I don't know. I don't want to put
like
him
that,
the same.
It could be like that second tier, you know, like that Michigan dude,
Bo Nix.
Or like, you know, Bo Nix. Yeah.
I don't know. I want.
There's going to be one of those guys that comes up and becomes like the fourth by the time because people want quarterbacks so bad.
I don't want a half measure though. I want a full measure. And they did that with Daniel Jones, and I want the guy. I don't want the Bo Nix who's going to be here for like 4 or 5 years, and they're kind of like, you know, we'll see. JD McCarthy, I wasn't very impressed watching him. I understand the cop out of, well, he wasn't asked to do a whole lot of Michigan. Well, I mean, when is that ever?
Then how are you supposed to judge him? Exactly. How do you know? Like, I mean, what the hell?
Exactly. Yeah. So we will see in about a month or so, or actually 2 months or so. You're probably getting a new quarterback. We'll see about me. But thank you, Kenny, for joining me, filling in for Capper, and joining us tonight for Bay Hill. Give a couple of plugs. Where can we find you and all your stuff for Gulp? Yeah,
you can find me. I write a weekly article for Gulp's Corner. You can find me there, gulpscorner.com. It's my course preview at the beginning of the week, trends, stats to look for, stuff like that. And then by the end of the week, I'll go over my favorite GPP plays, fade of the week, which has been like amazing this year. I don't think I've had a golfer in my fade of the week finish better than top 29. So it's been a pretty good year on that. That's, you know, DFS wise, it's normally people like $9,000 and up. So it's been pretty good in that time. I'll do my final betting card there as well. You can also find me on the Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast, iTunes, Spotify, all that stuff. Just, you know, go into my X feed at KendoVT. You can find all that info.
All right, great. Thank you very much. And I'm going to take a little break, eat a little dinner because the kids maybe not eat anything. But then I'm going to do my live show later, break down live Hong Kong, go over a couple bets. Nice. And yeah, stay tuned if you're watching on the live stream. I'll be back in about a half hour or so. So thank you, Kenny, once again. Good luck with all your bets. Good luck to Rory this week. And everybody watching, thanks for joining. And let's go make some money.